life gives you to run around, you say you wanna know how much dues must you pay. Well, you can have what you want to. Where there's a will, there's always a way. Keeping your eyes on that mountaintop, one step at a time. Don't ever, ever stop. Keep on when your mind says quit. Dream on till you find you're living it. I'll be right by your side. Yeah, baby, keep on. Don't stop till you win your prize. Lean on all the love that's in my eyes. You're a diamond to me. Yes, you are. Shine on. Shine on.
Eric Bibb on acoustic guitar with Shine On. It's from his 2006 album, Diamond Days. Bibb got the performing and activist bug early on in his life and from some of the very best. He's a son of musical theater singer Leon Bibb, the nephew of composer and jazz pianist John Lewis of the Modern Jazz Quartet, and godson of Paul Robeson. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today we're talking about the meaning of the 4th of July. Well, of course, as you know, yesterday was not a broadcasting day for me and for most of us here at PRN, but my hesitancy about it goes back to shortly after I arrived in this country as a teenager. And I just couldn't identify with all the celebration and the hot dogs and the mustard and the fireworks and all the red, white, and blue. And then I did some reading. And then I found out why I was having difficulty identifying with the 4th of July celebrations. On July the 5th, this is the day that I choose to connect with. On July the 5th, 1852, the day after white America commemorated the 76th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, although historians say the final document was actually signed on August the 2nd, 1776, and not July the 4th, 1776, noted anti-slavery crusader Frederick Douglass, then a prominent resident of Rochester, New York, was invited to speak at the prestigious Corinthian Hall. Among the 600 people who packed the hall to hear the then 34-year-old orator speak was President Millard Fillmore. Douglass was in no mood for jubilation or celebration. The National Independence Day celebration, he said, was a sharp contrast to the horrors and injustices the new Americans were inflicting on millions of others through the institution called slavery. His talk didn't have a title as such, but it has been given a title, a relevant title, since it was part of the speech itself. What to the slave is the 4th of July? Well, of course, today, slavery, at least in letter, does not exist in the United States anymore. But does that mean it doesn't exist? at all? Does it mean that freedom is for all? Freedom is enjoyed by all in our time. I want to share with you an excerpt of that speech delivered here by the late extraordinary actor Ossie Davis, in which he reads and puts his own passion into this excerpt of the speech directly from the text of Frederick Douglass's speech on July the 5th, 1852, which is popularly referred to as What to the Slave is the 4th of July, or The Meaning of the 4th of July to the Slave.
The meaning
here
of
is Ossie Davis.
Negro. The papers and placards say that I am to deliver a 4th of July oration. This certainly sounds large and out of the common way for me. It is true that I have often had the privilege to speak in this beautiful hall and to address many who now honor me with their presence. But neither their familiar faces nor the perfect gauge I think I have of Corinthian Hall seems to free me from embarrassment. The fact is, ladies and gentlemen, the distance between this platform and the slave plantation from which I escaped is considerable, and the difficulties to be overcome in getting from the latter to the former are by no means slight. That I am here today is, to me, a matter of astonishment as well as of gratitude. You will not, therefore, be surprised if in what I have to say, I evince no elaborate preparation, nor grace my speech with any high-sounding exordium. With little experience and with less learning, I have been able to throw my thoughts hastily and imperfectly together. And trusting to your patient and generous indulgence, I will proceed to lay them before you. This, for the purpose of this celebration, is the 4th of July. It is the birthday of your national independence and of your political freedom. This, to you, is what the Passover was to the emancipated people of God. It carries your minds back to the day and to the act of your great deliverance, and to the signs and to the wonders associated with that act and that day. This celebration also marks the beginning of another year of your national life and reminds you that the Republic of America is now 76 years old. I am glad, fellow citizens, that your nation is so young. 76 years, though a good old age for a man, is but a mere speck in the life of a nation. 70 years is the allotted time for individual men. But nations number their years by thousands. According to this fact, you are, even now, only in the beginning of your national career, still lingering in the period of childhood. I repeat, I am glad this is so. There is hope in the thought, and hope is much needed under the dark clouds which lower above the horizon. The eye of the reformer is met with angry flashes, portending disastrous times. But his heart may well beat lighter at the thought that America is young and that she is still in the impressible stage of her existence. May he not hope that high lessons of wisdom, of justice, and of truth will yet give direction to her destiny. Were the nation older, the patriot's heart might be sadder, and the reformer's brow heavier. Its future might be shrouded in gloom, and the hope of its prophets go out in sorrow. There is consolation in the thought that America is young. Great streams are not easily turned from channels worn deep in the course of ages. They may sometimes rise in quiet and stately majesty and inundate the land, refreshing and fertilizing the earth with their mysterious properties. They may also rise in wrath and fury and bear away on their angry waves the accumulated wealth of years of toil and hardship. They, however, gradually flow back to the same old channel and flow on as serenely as ever. But while the river may not be turned aside, it may dry up and leave nothing behind but the withered branch and the unsightly rock to howl in the abyss-sweeping wind the sad tale of departed glory. As with rivers, so with nations. Fellow citizens, I am not wanting in respect for the fathers of this republic. The signers of the Declaration of Independence were brave men. They were great men, too, great enough to give frame to a great age. It does not often happen to a nation to raise at one time such a number of truly great men. The point from which I am compelled to view them is not certainly the most favorable. And yet, I cannot contemplate their great deeds with less than admiration. They were statesmen, patriots, and heroes, and for the good they did and the principles they contended for, I will unite with you to honor their memory. They loved their country better than their own private interests. And though this is not the highest form of human excellence, all will concede that it is a rare virtue, and that when it is exhibited, it ought to command respect. He who will intelligently lay down his life for his country is a man whom it is not in human nature to despise. Your fathers staked their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor on the cause of their country. In their admiration of liberty, they lost sight of all other interest. They were peace men, but they preferred revolution to peaceful submission to bondage. They were quiet men, but they did not shrink from agitating against oppression. They showed forbearance, but they knew its limits. They believed in order, but not in the order of tyranny. With them, nothing was settled that was not right. With them, justice, liberty, and humanity were final, not slavery and oppression. You may well cherish the memory of such men. They were great in their day and generation. Their solid manhood stands out the more as we contrast it with these degenerate times. How circumspect, exact, and proportionate were all their movements. How unlike the politicians of an hour. Their statesmanship looked beyond the passing moment and stretched away in strength into the distant future. They seized upon eternal principles and set a glorious example in their defense. Mark them. Fully appreciating the hardships to be encountered, firmly believing in the right of their cause, honorably inviting the scrutiny of an onlooking world, reverently appealing to heaven to attest their sincerity, soundly comprehending the solemn responsibility they were about to assume, wisely measuring the terrible odds against them, your fathers, the fathers of this republic, did most deliberately, under the inspiration of a glorious patriotism and with a sublime faith in the great principles of justice and freedom, laid deep the cornerstone of the national superstructure, which has risen and still rises in grandeur around you. Of this fundamental work, this day is the anniversary. Our eyes are met with demonstrations of joyous enthusiasm. Banners and pennants wave exultingly on the breeze. The din of business, too, is hushed. Even Mammon seems to have quitted his grasp on this day. The ear-piercing fife and the stirring drum unite their accents with the ascending peal of 1,000 church bells. Prayers are made, hymns are sung, and sermons are preached in honor of this day. While the quick martial tramp of a great and multitudinous nation, echoed back by all the hills, valleys, and mountains of a vast continent, bespeak the occasion one of thrilling and universal interest, a nation's jubilee. Fellow citizens, pardon me. Allow me to ask, why am I called upon to speak here today? What have I, or those I represent, to do with your national independence? Are the great principles of political freedom and of national justice embodied in that Declaration of Independence extended to us? And am I, therefore, called upon to bring our humble offering to the national altar and to confess the benefits and express devout gratitude for the blessings resulting from your independence to us? Would to God, both for your sakes and ours, that an affirmative answer could be truthfully returned to these questions. Then would my task be light, and my burden easy and delightful. For who is there so cold that a nation's sympathy could not warm him? Who so obdurate and dead to the claims of gratitude that would not thankfully acknowledge such priceless benefits? Who so stolid and selfish that would not give his voice to swell the hallelujahs of a nation's jubilee when the chains of servitude had been torn from his limbs? I am not that man. In a case like that, the dumb might eloquently speak, and the lame man leap as an hart. But such is not the state of the case. I say it with a sad sense of disparity between us. I am not included within the pale of this glorious anniversary. Your high independence only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. The blessings in which you this day rejoice are not enjoyed in common. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence, bequeathed by your fathers, is shared by you, not by me. The sunlight that brought light and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice. I must mourn. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems were inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? If so, there is a parallel to your conduct. And let me warn you that it is dangerous to copy the examples of a nation whose crimes, towering up to heaven, were thrown down by the breath of the Almighty, burying that nation in irrevocable ruin. I can today take up the plaintive lament of a peeled and woe-smitten people. By the rivers of Babylon, There we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there, they that carried us away captive required of us a song. And they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. Fellow citizens, above your national tumultuous joy, I hear the mournful wail of millions whose chains, heavy and grievous yesterday, are today rendered more intolerable by the jubilee shouts that reach them. If I do forget, if I do not faithfully remember those bleeding children of sorrow this day, may my right hand forget her cunning, and may my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. To forget them, to pass lightly over their wrongs, and to chime in with the popular theme would be treason most scandalous and shocking, and would make me a reproach before God and the world. My subject, then, fellow citizens, is American slavery. I shall see this day and its popular characteristics from the slave's point of view. Standing there, identified with the American bondman, making his wrongs mine, I do not hesitate to declare with all my soul that the character and conduct of this nation never looked blacker to me than on the 4th of July. Whether returned to the declarations of the past or to the professions of the present, the conduct of the nation seems equally hideous and revolting. America is false to the past, false to the present, and solemnly binds herself to be false to the future. Standing with God and the crushed and bleeding slave on this occasion, I will, in the name of humanity, which is outraged, in the name of liberty, which is fettered, in the name of the Constitution and the Bible, which are disregarded and trampled upon, dare to call in question and to denounce with all the emphasis I can command everything that serves to perpetuate slavery, the great sin and shame of America. I will not equivocate. I will not excuse. I will use the severest language I can command. And yet not one word shall escape me that any man whose judgment is not blinded by prejudice, or who is not at heart a slaveholder, shall not confess to be right and just. But I fancy I hear someone of my audience say, it is just in this circumstance that you and your brother abolitionists fail to make a favorable impression on the public mind. Would you argue more and denounce less? Would you persuade more and rebuke less? Your cause would be much more likely to succeed. But I submit, where all is plain, there is nothing to be argued. What point in the anti-slavery creed would you have me argue? On what branch of the subject do the people of this country need light? Must I undertake to prove that the slave is a man? That point is conceded already. Nobody doubts it. The slaveholders themselves acknowledge it in the enactment of laws of their government. They acknowledge it when they punish disobedience on the part of the slave. There are 72 crimes in the state of Virginia which, if committed by a black man, no matter how ignorant he be, subject him to the punishment of death, while only two of the same crimes will subject a white man to the like punishment. What is this but the acknowledgement that the slave is a moral, intellectual, and responsible being? The manhood of the slave is conceded. It is admitted in the fact that Southern statute books are covered with enactments forbidding, under severe fines and penalties, the teaching of the slave to read or to write. When you can point to any such laws in reference to the beasts of the field, then I may consent to argue the manhood of the slave. When the dogs in your street, when the fowls of the air, when the cattle on your hills, when the fish of the sea and the reptiles that crawl shall be unable to distinguish the slave from a brute, then will I argue with you that the slave is a man. For the present, it is enough to affirm the equal manhood of the Negro race. Is it not astonishing that while we are plowing, planting, and reaping, using all kinds of mechanical tools, erecting houses, constructing bridges, building ships, working in metals of brass, iron, copper, silver, and gold, that while we are reading, writing, and ciphering, acting as clerks, merchants, and secretaries, having among us lawyers, doctors, ministers, poets, authors, editors, orators, and teachers, that while we are engaged in all manner of enterprises common to other men, digging gold in California, capturing the whale in the Pacific, feeding sheep and cattle on the hillside, living, moving, acting, thinking, planning, living in families as husbands, wives, and children, and, above all, confessing and worshiping the Christian's God, and looking hopefully for life and immortality beyond the grave, we are called upon to prove that we are men. Would you have me argue that man is entitled to liberty, that he is the rightful owner of his own body? You have already declared it. Must I argue the wrongfulness of slavery? Is that a question for Republicans? Is it to be settled by the rules of logic and argumentation as a matter beset with great difficulty, involving a doubtful application of the principle of justice, hard to be understood? How should I look today in the presence of Americans, dividing and subdividing a discourse to show that men have a natural right to freedom, speaking of it relatively and positively, negatively and affirmatively? To do so would be to make myself ridiculous and to offer an insult to your understanding. There is not a man beneath the canopy of heaven that does not know that slavery is wrong for him. What? Am I to argue that it is wrong to make men brutes, to rob them of their liberty, to work them without wages, to keep them ignorant of their relations to their fellow men, to beat them with sticks, to flay their flesh with a lash, to load their limbs with irons, to hunt them with dogs, to sell them at auction, to sunder their families, to knock out their teeth, to burn their flesh, to starve them into obedience and submission to their masters? Must I argue that a system thus marked with blood and stained with pollution is wrong? No, I will not. I have better employment for my time and strength than such arguments would imply. What then remains to be argued? Is it that slavery is not divine? That God did not establish it? That our doctors of divinity are mistaken? There is blasphemy in the thought. That which is inhuman cannot be divine. Who can reason on such a proposition? They that can may. I cannot. The time for such argument is past. At a time like this, scorching irony not convincing argument is needed. Oh, had I the ability and could reach the nation's ear, I would today pour out a fiery stream of biting ridicule, blasting reproach, withering sarcasm, and stern rebuke. For it is not light that is needed, but fire. It is not the gentle shower, but thunder. We need the storm, the whirlwind, and the earthquake. The feeling of the nation must be quickened. The conscience of the nation must be roused. The propriety of the nation must be startled. The hypocrisy of the nation must be exposed. And its crimes against God and man must be proclaimed and denounced.
Well, there's no way you can hear that speech. And not get the point being made. There's no way that you can have some kind of doubt as to what it was that Frederick Douglass was pointing to, and why for him and for the people he represented, as he says, why there is an entirely different reaction to this holiday, this great celebration of the independence of this country. So I ask you now to gather your thoughts about the meaning of the 4th of July, the meaning of yesterday's grand national celebration to you and me and others. What should it mean? What does it mean? And where do we place ourselves in the spectrum? Are we full citizens? Are we Americans through and through? Are we enjoying the rights and privileges of citizenship? These are very important questions. Let's hear your thoughts at 888-874-4888. We're talking about the 4th of July, on the 5th of July, which is when Frederick Douglass challenged his audience, which included President Willard Fillmore, in this very profound discussion about the flip side of the coin. Yes, there is great national mirth and celebration, but a total unwillingness, in fact, a defiance of looking on the flip side of that coin. 888-874-4888. While you call in, I just wanted to remind you that this speech was not a short speech like the excerpt we just heard. This speech in printed form is more than 10,000 words. So he had a lot to say. And therefore, we have a lot to talk about and think about today. And that's why I have really never attached myself to the whole idea of Independence Day. Because the same rights and privileges that were fought for were denied a whole bunch of folks on the basis of their race. And it continues to this day. So, What are your thoughts? Are you as mesmerized as I am? Are you stultified? Are you thinking about what it is this day that was celebrated nationally yesterday was supposed to mean to this nation? And people, of course, they don't think for the most part about the deep stuff. It's just, you know, picnicking and family time and taking it easy and watching the games. But as you heard in that excerpt of Frederick Douglass's speech, there's a whole different world that reacts very differently on Independence Day. Are we reacting the same way today as he did in 1852, on July the 5th, 1852? Are you as concerned about the issues of freedom and justice today as he was on July the 5th, 1852? Tag from New York, we start with you. What have you to say? What are you thinking?
Peace, says you, Teresa, and I appreciate your sharing that excerpt, especially from the brother Ozzie Davis in Power. That's just very strong reading.
Thank you.
As for the question, you know, all I can really think of in hearing those words is the fact of the continuation of slavery to this day through the 13th Amendment. And so I think about all of sisters and brothers inside who Lee and yesterday and ongoing, you know, are facing the kinds of conditions that our abolitionist forefather, Frederick Douglass, was describing, you know. And I think about the fact that more and more of those individuals are up against that, as he did at this moment. I feel both horrified at the fact that such a system could continue to this day under the 13th Amendment, and that so many of us can be so hoodwinked, so deceived about the nature of this state that people celebrate every year and all the time. These flag-waving ceremonies, et cetera. But I also am very encouraged at actions such as coming up in August, starting August 1st, the nationwide prison strike, and so many like it. The fact that our sister Debbie Africa was just recently released, and any other such victory over slavery as Frederick Douglass an embodiment of. And as for how we, where we are on the spectrum, I align myself with those abolitionists that come for us and that are out here struggling to this day. As far as the U.S. sees us, I mean, as we can see very clearly, most anywhere we look at this point, because it's become so overt, the sees us as subjects, essentially, and those who've been guilty of crimes, they see even as even lesser than that, as individuals.
Does it shock you today that this speech is as relevant today, as essential today, as it was in 1852?
I wouldn't say that it shocks me. It galvanizes me, and it is certainly disheartening on many levels to think that our ancestors had to puts on the line for us to continue to struggle in this state. But I couldn't say that it shocks me very little. This state does at this point shock me because of their atrocious record.
Well, thank you for getting us started today. Thank you for your contribution, Todd. Let's go to Jeff from New Jersey. What are you thinking? Not just about the speech, but the applicability to our situation today.
Yes, I am. And his speech pointed out one of the problems when you don't lead your own fight. And as I'm sure that the people who invited him to speak and who fought for slavery, anti-slavery, were well-intentioned. However, the experience wasn't their own. So they made a great error in asking this gentleman to come and speak about Independence Day while they celebrated and its people were still enslaved. And it seems to be what has continued on in our history. If we don't take, as black people, we don't take our own lead in our independence, if we don't take our own take responsibility for our happiness and well-being and our economic health and our regular health, et cetera, et cetera. If we don't do that and we continue to have people lead for us, then we will continue to find ourselves in compromising situations. Now, growing up, we didn't get the history of slavery. We had a very, very poor comprehensive study on it. So basically, we were slaves. There was Frederick Douglass, W.E.B. Du Bois, George Washington Carver, and he had a couple of inventions. Then you went to Martin Luther King and not so much Malcolm X. And we, as black people, I've never seen so many people be so angry when they took a black history class in college, which gave us more of a comprehension. Now, the problem with that is, you know, we can come to our understanding. But in a black history class in college, it's all black students. No one else in the college gets a comprehensive understanding, which means other races that will come here, other races that will be politically active, other races that will do things, don't really understand what it was that we as people had to suffer through and continue to suffer through. So we're not going to get the type of representation in things like police brutality. Now, Dr. Georgia Grew talked about the desensitizing of sympathy for the black man when you had these hangings, these lynchings, where people were in the picture dressed in their Sunday best. And, you know, they're all cowering to get positioned to appear in the picture with a smile. And they have their kids. They raised up their kids in front of these burnt black bodies. In a completely decent, and not only did they not understand the experience that the black man was going through, but then he became not a man, not a human being. You know, they would put the laws on the book to say that we are human beings, but the general population has never believed that the black man is a human being. That's why these black men getting assassinated on the streets in cold blood, on video, and, you know, there's no great uprising. There are a few folks that are get angry about it, but towns should be shut down. Officers should be made to be held accountable, you know, and they're not.
But let's get back to the structural point of you know, when I say structural, social structure. What this country started out to be, and as Frederick Douglass describes, the yeoman efforts, and he didn't flinch, he said these were noble efforts to forge a country. And he did not disagree with the intentions of the so-called founding fathers, because freedom is a kind of primordial effort, a basic feeling. But today, do we see that that attitude is changing, has changed, will change, where people would recognize the universality of that, that in the same way that this group felt it necessary to organize against oppression, that people today suffering greatly under the yoke of oppression have exactly the same desire?
I think you are seeing a little more coming together, because the history is now in the computers. And even though they don't teach the history, there's a lot of people out there who have studied the history and continue to preach the history. So I think you are seeing, and I think the economic times and the merging of the two major parties in this country to create the elite and the non-elite, that the oppression is hitting home, and that people are, you know, it's no longer, well, you know, we vote for, but at least I'm white. That narrative is no longer, people are not buying into that as much, because they've been promised so much in this country, and they've been promised the freedom of this and the freedom of that, and that we're not, as a country, we're not seeing it. Not black nor white. What we're seeing is a great divide. So, you know, some people are coming down into the pot with the black folks, you know, and understanding some of what we've been going through, not all of it, but they understand the oppression. And the promise of the country was in those founding documents, as far as what it was supposed to be. And for those who even felt privileged, and because it didn't include women, and it just included basically white men and landowners, those who were promised that if they did the right thing, that they could get the right things, are now seeing that was kind of, it's been hijacked. You know, our rights have been eroded.
Thank you for offering your thoughts today. Thanks a lot, Jeff, for calling in. Veronica from Delaware, you're on the air.
Good day. Peace, love, and light.
Thank you.
What up? I enjoyed the International African Arts Festival because fortunately...
Could you speak directly into your phone? We're having difficulty hearing you.
Can you hear me better now?
Well...
Hello?
I hope so. I hope we'll be able to hear you better.
Okay. Besides I think of what will the future hold for our children and grandchildren if we don't preserve or change, you know, because many people are sitting languishing in prisons throughout America because of promises broken. And I had to really sit here and think of people as the Maddoxes, the Felders, Dr. Jack Felder, Leola Maddox, excuse me, and some of the people that worked very hard, the Kwame Torres, that worked so diligently for us to have a future. And it is... We must remove ourselves from politics as usual, just remove ourselves from this system of oppression, because we have tried this and praying, and it seems that we need to go a route. It has already been written, the right things to do. Following it is the issue.
Well, Veronica, I'm sorry, but the volume is so low, we can barely hear you well. So we would accept what you have just offered, and we move on. Thank you so much for calling. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Hello.
I'm going to try to answer your question about how I feel about it. And the feeling that comes over to me is that things from that time in 1852 to it is today in 2018 have changed, but they're still the same. They are still the same. Frederick Douglass was somewhat complimentary of the so-called founders, these slave owners and other elites that formed the country. And he made some complimentary remarks about them. But the point is, we are in a condition that is essentially in the same as it was at that time. The glue that holds this country together is still holding fast. And that glue is a system invented in the early ages, days before the Declaration of Independence, of white supremacy. That is the glue that holds this thing together. That is the glue that the elites have to control all levels of the country and enrich themselves at the expense of the masses of people on a stolen land that they stole from the indigenous people, and the wealth they made from enslaving African people who are kidnapped and playing them against the European people that they brought over. So, you know, things are the same. If you have white supremacy then, you still have it now. I think also we need to take note of that revolution wasn't just because people wanted so-called liberty and freedom for all and that sort of thing. That's ridiculous because it didn't apply to everybody. But they were very cautious of the idea that in the British Empire, they were thinking of getting rid of chattel slavery. And eventually the British Empire did get rid of chattel slavery, whereas the people in this country, the stolen land we have and called the United States of America, didn't want that to happen. So they thought maybe it would be a good idea to get away from King George and have an independent state. So my thing is that it has changed, but it still remains the same. White supremacy is infected all over the country, and we still have it today as it was yesterday.
Well, thank you, and thank you all. That brings us to the end of our program today. I urge you to get a copy of this speech, read it very carefully. It is not exactly an easy read, but it is so eloquent, and it provides a proper framework for us to understand the essential reality of life in the United States. This notion that we're all Americans is false, that we're all in this soup together, no, it's also false. But we seldom appreciate the debt that is owed to people who were targeted for this kind of uneven treatment. And it was planned from the very beginning to be generational in effect. And that accounts, Veronica was talking about, you know, thinking about how things will affect generations. We've already gone through several generations since in 1852. But the structural obstructions to equality and justice and freedom were built in to this notion of who deserves to share in this notion of American citizenship. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. And we will talk with each other again tomorrow, Free Your Mind Friday. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks all the more for contributing. Bye-bye.
Shine on. Well, I know what you've been through, I see. But it's time to leave it behind and let it be. Yeah, harder than wisdom is something you can't buy. It's the wings of experience that make you fly. Don't look down and don't look back. Don't turn around.